This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you know you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, unlike the Owls, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So there's only one thing left to say. What's everybody having? Order now on the McDonald's app and you can also get rewards points delivered too. So that ordering today means you'll get some tasty rewards later on. And between you and me, if you order just before kickoff, you can get it just in time for half time. But I've not told you that. Only via the app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. See you later.
The Wednesday Week is sponsored by Michael Constantine Wealth Management. We bet you can't find a financial advisor closer to Hillsborough Stadium.
Okay, so hello and welcome to a very special version of the Wednesday Week. Not only is it special because I'm on it, because that doesn't happen much anymore, let's be honest. I go to a pub quiz on a Wednesday. Steve is here, but we're also joined by the one and only Mr. Chris McClure, which, you know, might be a name that you kind of know in the back of your head, that actually, Chris, I'm going to tell you now, this is one of my chat up lines on Tinder or whatever. When people tell you, like, oh, tell me something about yourself. And I go, do you know what? One of my mates has got the most famous face of a generation. Now, you went for probably the most famous fag break of a generation. I want to know, has that set you up for life?
It's something I will never, ever get. I think I would have to find water on Mars. And even if I found water on Mars, they'd go, that kid off Monkey's album found water. That'll just stick with me forever. And for a few years, I grappled with it, to be honest. Like, I'd say, like, there were a period of time where it became a bit of a weight on me, if I'm honest. And because It were all anyone ever referred to. If we went to a christening or a wedding or anywhere, it'd be like, which you would, of course, like, by the way, do you know? And it started to become like this, like, thing that were over my head. But I've, since that, it's lovely, really. I'm at peace with it, and it's nuts, really. I mean, I stopped at a mate's house in Liverpool a few months ago, and kept in his spare room, and I've got in bed, and he's got like the thousand albums you must own, or, you know, these sort of books, and I'm flicking through it, and bang, it's like
moments like face.
Yeah, and it's up, and like Summit Records, it's up again. It's like one minute you're looking at Stevie Wonder, and then like next minute you're like, oh wow, they're putting it in that like category. And there is moments where it bends your head. But yeah, it's just something that will never ever leave me, and I've come to terms with it. It's fine, and I suppose, you know, the longer it goes on, the more proud I am that I'll be associated with that time, especially in Sheffield.
It's literally one of the greatest albums of all time. Like, yeah. Don't get me wrong, I'm an Arctic Monkeys fangirl. Like, my cousin's Jamie Cook. I've not seen him in 20 odd years, but he is. Don't get me any free tickets, like, but he is.
All for that.
I'm from Sheffield, of course. My cousin's an Arctic Monkey, but like, do you not find that it's just something really bloody special to be? Because it's your face, isn't it? Like, the album's the album. Like, we all know that album. We all know certain songs from it. You know, there are absolute classics that I will pass on to my children, and I will hope they will pass on to their children. But to be that face that is associated with it. That's mental, isn't it?
Yeah, but it becomes
that's
like...
bigger than Owlette's, that. I'm not going to lie.
You become a bit numb to it. You're like, it's just this... it's just this thing that's been there for like, because it's, well, how long ago is it, like 16 years now? It's like, I have to like have some, sometimes when I get some perspective on it, I'm like, oh my God, that's crazy. But usually it's just like, he's on Monkey's record. And it's like, there's no emotion to it. It's like, yeah. But like, there is, I went to see him at Leeds Festival, just gone. Of course, we've had pandemic and it's been a while since they toured. And you do get them moments where like there's 100,000 in a field singing them songs off that record. And you think, oh,
you've
yeah.
got me in your house. You I'm on your shelf.
We used to have a, me and Andy, who were original bass player, we were, where do you reckon your like most random place your face is? And I was like, well, Prince Harry's definitely a fan, so I reckon I've been in Buckingham Palace.
That's mental!
Like, you think of that, I reckon Jay-Z's got it. Jay-Z's got to have that record. Our picture's in Jay-Z's house, and we used to do like mad, it's just mad stuff like that, when you think, oh yeah, like, really famous people have it in their house.
Yeah, and they'll know your face as the album, because, I mean, we all did, like, growing up, that was like, to be fair, you could have punched me in the face and made a wall. I wouldn't have known who it was. But as a face on an album, like, I went to my mum and dad's the other week and I was sorting through some old stuff and that CD was there. And I was like, that's grief. That's mental.
Like, yes. And I've been in people's houses before. I bet in early days when I like, obviously, like, you'd go to like parties or like you'd be around at someone's house and they'd have it on wall. But, and then you're like, shall I say something or shall I not say something? Nah, I'm not. I'll just, and like, there's like a big poster on wall, but they like, they don't know.
Yeah.
You just go back to like for an after party and that. So you just keep it quiet and walk out. And think so
they never put two and two together and go,
no.
That look.
No, I think you'd notice me just from that image. So I think like you'd have to have someone point it out to you.
Yeah.
And there's been moments where I remember getting Tube in London and all Tube station were just that record. And I'm like getting on Tube and no one batted an eyelid. And I'm like, this is a bit surreal, isn't it?
So how did it all come about then, Chris? Like, what was the, I've read it many a times in different magazines and whatever else, but what was the situation that you ended up being the front cover of a, Christ, like a cult album of a generation?
We'd been friends for a few years by then, but we became friends just before they formed the band. And I went on tour, their first two UK tours. I think they put me down as a guitar tech. That is the loosest term anyone could ever. I couldn't even play a guitar, I couldn't even tune a string bass. They basically, I think, wanted someone on tour who were a mate who were just gonna be normal. And so it was me, band, and a guy called Tim Cleesby in a van. Like,
oh, I love Tim Cleesby. And now Tim great. Cleesby.
And yeah, it was just us six on first tour, but it was like mental, like crazy. By this point, they were way bigger than the venues they were playing. And then I got transferred to merchandise, which meant which was sound. And then they had two more guitar techs. But then it was obvious. It was quite apparent at that point that they were going to be big, but not as what not to what they were. But you could tell it were going to kick off. And asked me if I wanted to carry on being on tour. And it just didn't feel right. I thought it's going to get too big. This I'm going to get separated from it. And we've had us laugh. So I said no. And I was living in Manchester doing a degree. And so I kind of left it, and then they got in touch saying, look, we want some... I'm sure I'm right in saying this, that the album was going to be called The Weekend With, originally. Okay. And it was going to be like a loose concept album of a guy's weekend out. So it started on Friday tea time, view from the afternoon.
Makes sense, yeah.
All the way through this night out and, you know, to Sunday evening where a certain romance is like reflecting on it all and where they are, and which is cool in itself. So we did some photographs for the inlay, and each photograph represented a song. And I remember meeting a guy called Andy Brown, who's still around Sheffield. I met him at half of like 5 in the morning, and we walked down Division Street and round Sheffield. And then we got on a train to Liverpool to meet the actual design company. And they said, can we just take a facial front shot, portrait shot of you smoking a cigarette? Can you act like you're drunk? And I was like, yeah, whatever. But there were no idea what that was used for. And then I think either Alex or Andy got in touch and said, look, we like that image, but it's fake and we need it genuine. Like, can you go to Liverpool on a night out and the design company will give you some money. So long story short, we went to Liverpool, my cousin Tom and my mate Matt, and we met them about 11:30 in the morning. They just gave me, I don't know how much they gave me, it were in hundreds how much money they gave me, and just said, look, don't come back with any of that money. Make sure you spend it. And you can imagine, in them days, I would bang at it and all, so we went nuts. And got back to bar in Liverpool, Corova Bar, which is sadly no longer there, and she's like, you're not pissed enough. I'm like, trust me, I am. And other stuff happened. And, we went downstairs and we were like underneath Liverpool City. You could see people walking above us as they were taking photographs, but I'd like kind of nearly like passing out. And they got me a bin and being sick. And I smoked a full packet of Lambert and Butler.
Bloody hell.
We used to call them Lambert and Desperate. I smoked a full pack of fags and was just throwing up, but this like Polish photographer were just taking pictures anyway. They got us in a hotel. I woke up in Manchester, Tom woke up in Liverpool, Matt woke up in Sheffield, Carr were in Liverpool, Carr needed to be in Sheffield. It was like, what has gone on for you? And Tom, that funny story from that night that no one knows, our Tom walked home to his mates in Liverpool and thought he was going back to his mate's house, and walks in, sits on settee. Woman comes down, starts screaming, he'd gone in wrong house and sat down at wrong settee. There were people watching a film.
Does that woman now know the situation?
She'll never know what were taken that night, like why Tommy were in such a tangle that night, why you were sat on a settee.
Mental, isn't it? So if you think now, if I woke up tomorrow and there's some pisshead on my sofa, probably Dan Fudge, like I wouldn't know if it was the start of...
Yeah, it's like the next Nevermind by Nirvana, that's just...
Yeah! Wow.
And then they just said, we're using that image, it's great. When I saw it, I did think, whoa, that's a bit intense. But I didn't, even at that point, I don't think I realised truly what had happened until the day it came out. And it were like, there you go, have some mayhem for a few years because it's going to go, and it just went crackers.
So Stevie, go on.
No, I was just going to ask from that point, I was just going to sort of say, you know, you talked about the point where you've seen it for the first time. At what point did it actually become, fucking hell, this is huge?
The day it come out, the Monday morning, I knew on the Sunday, I knew that they were queuing from on Fargate all uptown, up city centre and stuff. And it were like, this is on another scale big. And
the thing is, like with the Arctic Monkeys, Chris, is what a lot of people don't realise is that there was an underground scene, wasn't there, at the time? So obviously, like John and Alex were involved in the Boardwalk, and I used to go to the Grapes all the time, and we used to sell out.
It had been bubbling up, and we knew because we'd been involved in that scene, but it just got bigger than anyone could handle, and like the secret were out by that. Like it's massive by this point. And I woke up on Monday morning in Manchester, and my mum rang me and said, "Chris, there's like six reporters outside house." then I used to work at a pub in Grenner, and landlord ringing, going, "Chris, there's just reporters everywhere. They're asking for interviews off people. Like, what should we tell them?" And like everyone just went, "Tell them to fuck off." Like, band didn't speak to media. We didn't. No, I weren't going to speak to them. So, and then I remember Fifth Avenue nightclub in Manchester rang me and said, which were big like indie night, I suppose. And they rang me and said, "Look, I bet you've had a crazy day. Why don't you bring all your mates down to nightclub, and you can have a free bar and you can party on." So we had like top deck at night. Well, I did. Band were nowhere to be seen. I've got like top level of this nightclub, and it was just and they just literally played record. That's all they played. They just played that record like six times throughout night, and it was just mental. And then in following years, my brother's band were doing well, and it was just like we saw things and we're in situations that were just like, how did we end up here? How on earth have we ended up in this situation with parties you got to and people you met? And it were good, you know. It were a moment in, like, well, not even like Sheffield history, it's like proper national, like international music
history. That's, oh, yeah, to me, like, for a generational thing, like that front cover to me is the equivalent of the Abbey Road sort of crossing the road cover. Do you know what I mean? Like,
it's that important to that. There's certain records, isn't there, that, like, whether it be like rap or rock and roll or like even pop, like there's certain records that like capture your generation, and that was the record, weren't it?
And I don't think that's a thing anymore, is it? Because we don't buy, I mean, records are coming back into play, aren't they? But we download on Spotify or iTunes or whatever.
Yeah,
I don't think it's a thing anymore that you have a physical representation.
I think they were probably last artist where they were a bit of mystique to it. Like, it was still word of mouth, and they were a bit of like, you had to like do a bit of digging to find out what was going on. Or now it's very instant, innit? But I don't get me wrong, they're still great records, and people, you know, I'm sure a young person will be like, I remember when I heard Stormzy for the first time. You know what I mean? I get it. You're not supposed to get it when you're older, but.
It goes back to that point, though, doesn't it? It goes back to that time, because what we're talking, sort of 2006, wasn't it, ish?
Yeah.
So it's around about that time. You're still listening to it. You're still accessing music through CDs. And I can remember the first time I came across it was going up to... it's a weird story. We actually jumped in a van and went up to Blackpool for darts in summer of 2006.
Hey, good.
And one of the lads has just dropped in. Oh, have you heard this band, Arctic Monkeys? And it were a group of lads from sort of Rotherham side.
Yeah.
And we've listened to them. Like, fucking hell, this is decent, isn't it? And then we spent the next sort of 6-8 months all getting in and all talking about it and all listening to it. And that's sort of it's come before the release of the album. And you're listening to the songs that were on that demo that then went onto the album. You're like, oh, I'm familiar with that, and I get that. And you felt like you were part of something.
That's the key.
If that makes sense.
You've just hit nail on head.
You felt like you were part of something before it became commercial and before it became big. You recognised that song. You recognised that riff. You recognised all of that before you'd even seen the faces. You felt like you were part of it. And I think that's massive. And
you said two things there. You said two things that are bang on, because one, as soon as you heard it, you were obsessed. I don't care what it is, where they are, get me into them. We're all into it. We're having it. As soon as it came on. And two, there was a distinct feeling that we found this before you lot in London.
Yes.
Before industry.
Oh, yes. That's exactly it, isn't it?
And I think... like, I think there were a famous quote from editor at NME that said basically they'd killed us. Like, the fans of Arctic Monkeys, like, destroyed NME because we needed we should have had the exclusive, but we don't seek us lot up here. And well, not even up here, like, on internet, we were faster than them on internet forums, and word of mouth and sharing it. And that's great, isn't it? Like,
I went on a school trip. This sounds really, really posh, but it wasn't at all. But we went on a school trip to Spain, and I remember this kid on the coach had got that album, or he'd got a copy of Mardi Bum and something else. And I remember him playing it on the coach, and we were all like, this speaks to us. Like, this is it. And then I remember saying to my mum, like, oh, I need a lift. I've got a ticket to this gig at the Grapes on Trippett Lane and all that. And when we got there, we were outside, and like, my uncle was outside. My mum was like, oh, how do you know them? And he was like, oh, yeah, James in band. And it all just kind of like bubbled. I'm not, like I said, he wouldn't know me if I shat on his face. Like, he didn't know me at all. But it was a really weird feeling of, yeah, we've discovered something before anyone else. So it was almost like, you know, you talk about the Beatles, you talk about those sorts of cliques that kind of form from bands, and I genuinely think that they were one of that sort of, I don't want to say repertoire, but you know what I mean, like, just as good.
I'll tell you the moment I realised when it, and this links into Ryan, who's your relation, Ricky, and who's sadly not with us anymore, and my brother, because Libertines were kept doing secret gigs in London. Pete Doherty were big on, like, I'm going to play in this person's flat at half six, whatever. And it was very DIY attitude. And my brother, a band called Harrison's from Hillsborough, at Monkeys, put a gig on in a practice room in Neepsend and just basically said, right, bring your mates, we'll have a gig. We're not even promoting. We don't need to promote it. We'll just invite us mates. And there were a bit of tension between... So my brother, who were in 1984 at the time, and Monkeys were like, we were all... And all like Grenoside, Ecclesfield and Chapeltown lot were all like best mates. That were our little crew. Harrison's, although... they were part of the scene 100% and around it and in it. And like, there was still some tension between Hillsborough lot and us lot from ridiculous, really.
I know. But
there were a kid called Richard Rice, who's also sadly not with us. And he kind of like flitted between two. He were like a bit of an olive branch. So I've gone to Rice's, we've gone to Netto on Middlewood Road, sucked it all. His mum's house just off Middlewood Road. And then we've got tram. And everyone, you can imagine there's like 30 kids from Chap, Echo and Hillsborough in this practice room, and like there's something bubbling. Your Ryan's there, and something's bubbling.
Was it down at the Wicker, did you say?
It was like, it's on like, do you know where Riverside pub is?
Yeah, I remember about, you or your brother saying about it. Oh, I remember that day.
Down from there, and... our kid's gobbed off on stage like he used to, and like something's gone. Anyway, a pool ball's got chucked and a lot's gone. And I mean, it's like, there's no like security, it's just our party, isn't it? And it's like, there's people on pool, well, the famous line of pool cues in hands, and it's like a riot. I remember he'd upstairs with Ricey, just like when will this be over? Because it's a riot. And long story, I'll speed a story up. Everyone had gone. Like, oh, Harrison's mob had gone. Our lot had gone. There were about six of us left in. And Monkeys are like, Alex were like fuming, Andy were fuming. And I'm like, you've got to still play. You can't just, come on, we've come to watch you. And this were just before, they were just writing what they were, we now know as the classic songs. And they played, and there were like six of us went mental to when they were playing. And week after, I met Alex for a drink in Cowan Carf at Grenoside. And he's like, I've got a song, like, I've wrote a song, like, we're all talking about it. And he come to my mother's and played A Certain Romance. And I was like, yeah, you're a genius. Like, you've nailed it. And I've got a tattoo. I don't know if... This is ridiculous.
We're stripping off on webcam now. Stephen.
This is what's on YouTube.
That's meant to say see the truth, but it looks like Lee the Truffle. when he talks about over there, the truth is he says it's life, what is it, in A Certain Romance, for, and there's the truth that they can't see.
Yeah.
We used to, oh man, it's so young and embarrassing now, but we all used to be like, this is way before that song, be like, oh, you need to see truth, like, truth, see, we believe in romance, don't we? Like, it was like a thing, like we used to say, and I got it in a song, so me and Andy had to, on first tour, but yeah, it looks like Lee the Truffle, and I've always been in my phone, John's phone ever since as Lee the Truffle.
Amazing.
But yeah, that night will like, stay with me forever.
It's a funny one, isn't it? Because obviously, like, I've got the link there that my cousin was the dickhead with a pool cue in his hands. And that is...
There were a few dickheads in that room.
Like, but for me, that's a huge thing. And we had that as the funeral song. And then my other friend who passed away a couple of years later, he was there that night. We had it as his funeral song. And obviously, there's a bar in town that I tagged you in, Chris. There's a bar called Indigo.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Passes, down at Kellen. Yeah, and they've now got, so I think there's like five or six guys that run that. They all live on my road, but I don't know who they are. But they were all like really close mates with my cousin. And then they've opened one where the Devonshire Cat used to be and called that Indigo Resurrection. And they've actually got like the quote and dickheads who like to fight with pool cues in their hands. And then a picture of you at the side of it. And I was like,
yeah,
you're sorted here. But unfortunately, you don't drink, so they can't give you any pop.
that night just will go down in like urban legend, really. Like, yeah, it were unbelievable. And one of the greatest songs of the last 25 years come out of it.
Exactly, exactly. So let's move to the now.
The now. Lots happened in between the that now. Time and now.
My favourite thing in the entire world, despite knowing you for forever, Steve Bloody Bracknell. I love him. I love him. I don't understand how you and him are the same person. I can't separate it. It's weird.
Steve is real.
Steve is real. And that's what throws me in that I remember about 3 or 4 years ago now, when I was first started getting on like the dating scene again, your brother, our John the Reverend, that we'll come to, tried to fix me up with our Tommy. And yeah, now he's on Chuffin Bracknell. I just can't get my head around it. Like, where did Steve Bracknell come from? Who is he? Why aren't you him? Like, what? Arsene Elbows.
I had a... So, back, it does link to that time, because me, Jamie Cook, Tom Rowley, who now plays with Monkees, but we're in Millburn, Lewis Carnell from Millburn, we all played for Ecclesfield Red Rose football team. And Lewis and Joe Carnell's dad, Ian, were manager, and Tom Rowley's dad were assistant. And long story short, our kid had bought this lad a camera to be productive and creative, to try and get him into some, like, he wanted to make films, and he's like, I need to go out and film something. We're on the park, and I said, here, I've got something, film this. And I just took them two guys off. I was like, one of them were a bit, I think I've maybe overemphasized this, but one of them were a bit philosophical, like, you know, play out from back, lads, don't panic. And then Rob Rowley had come in like an absolute train and said, fuck this lot today, knock them sideways. And if one fades, we all fade, and all this. So I just took him off. And I put it out, and it got a good reaction. But then a sports betting website picked up on it and sent it like viral, this like clip. And I thought, there's something in this. I tried to develop it a bit and do longer episodes, blah, blah, blah. And it ended up getting optioned. It got signed to a company to like, but it, I was, I'm not ashamed to admit, I'll be honest, I were absolutely off my nut at this point. And I kind of just weren't in a position to do it because I was drinking too much, essentially. And so 3.5 years ago, I stopped drinking because it was doing me no good. And that's, it used to keep me up at night going, Bracknell, Bracknell, like, it, I've never scratched that itch. So I picked, when I got sober, I promised myself I'd pick, like, Steve's coming back. He's back in a big way. And to be honest with you, it doesn't get mentioned often, but Matt Exton, who did that Wednesday film.
Yeah, we love Matt, yes. He works at Channel 4 now, as he mentioned.
Yeah, he's an editor at Channel 4. Well, junior editor at Channel 4 is junior editor. I mean, yes, he's only junior.
Yeah, he's only a junior.
He'll get there. He'll get there.
He's a long-time listener. He'll get over it.
I rang him and said, look, Steve's back. And he's like, fucking hell, mate, I love it. So, yeah, just like, push. It seems a bit weird because I usually do it from character and I feel like I'm breaking fourth wall a bit.
No, I know. That's what I mean. That's what I said to you. I was like, are you coming on as Chris or Steve?
You know, secrets are. So I just built it and built it. And I think, obviously, people just see something in that guy what they fucking, they love. This, whether it's familiarity or a warmth or like a charm.
It's all of it, because I can speak for having played on Sundays, and you've played at levels and you play with lads that, you know, will do bits on Saturday and still turn up on Sunday and do it. But they're always run by somebody like Steve. Do you know what I mean? It's your Sundays, and they take it so seriously. And that's there. You get up, you have your McDonald's breakfast, you're out, you do it all. It's a checklist, isn't it? You go through. Back in day, it used to be collecting green and going through, checking this, that, and the other.
Yeah, yeah.
Taking it all, doing it all. You know, you every little bit that you do, it speaks to every single person. And that's why it's so good. And that's why it resonates with so many people, because you just go, been there, seen that, yeah, done that, spoke to that person. It's just, it's so real. It's phenomenal.
And Alt Best, I see it as a comedy, an Alt Best comedy. And I'm not putting myself in this bracket, but if you look at like Jim Royal or like Alt Best comedic characters or Ricky Gervais, like David Brent, they're like, you're like him, he's like such and such. Like, you all see yourself in them characters, really. And like, I know him. And I think that is touched on a bit of that. And what I really love and what really makes me happy is that obviously this is a live comedy that's unfolding in front of people's eyes online. And it's how like people like just get on board and like, they're like, it's like you lot. I'm even more messed up than us because you're like going along with it. There's no one.
We believe it. Like, I've known you since I was like 23 and I believe it. I'm like,
people are just like, no, I'm in. We're all, and not once has anyone questioned our fucking barmy at all. It's just like, no, we're in this alternative world and we're all fucking fans. Like, let's have it. And that's fucking bizarre. And like some of the stuff that's cropped up, you're just like, what on earth are we creating here? I remember having an argument with my missus though once, and she went, he's not a character, he's real, he's in front of your face now.
The thing is though, like the Steve that you have created, like, all right, Elef and Jeff, and he's, you know, we'll get onto it in a bit about the mental health side of things, but he'll be a Sheffield bloke like that. That's who Steve is. That's what he represents, you know, arse and elbows and all that. But he's a genuinely nice guy.
Yeah, I think you can see that, like underneath all the grandiose, like almost bullying. He's almost a bully at times, but underneath it all, his motive's quite beautiful, isn't it? Like he wants he just wants to succeed, doesn't he? And he just wants someone to turn around and go, you're the man. And he's never going to get it, but he's forever searching for that. He wants to, you know, probably when he was like 21, he was well-dressed, he was cool, he was downtown, he had like...
He was probably in an academy.
Yeah, you know, Oasis were out, he had swagger on, and people thought Steve's cool, and then... Times kind of dragged him down slowly, but in his head, he can't let go of that, I don't think. And I think that's the, you know, so you kind of, although it's the same way that, like, it's like how he is with Housey, it's the same way like Del Boy is with Rodney. It's like, it's bullying on a level, but it's coming from a place of love, really, if you'd like scratch surface.
You're right.
Maybe I'm looking far too deep into it.
Everything you've just said there about, you know, what he is and who he is. Everybody lived it. And those people that are talking about being 21 and they've got the world in front of them, they've got the future to look forward to, they're going to make it, and they're going to do this, it very seldom happens. So you can look back at it and you can, like I say, I can think of specific people in my life that I've known through football that I look at and go, I can see him in him, and I can see him in him, and I can see him in him, because those people actually do exist, you know.
And
from a local point of view, you know, the people that you're talking to, obviously some of those people are actually real people, you know, and
this is it.
And do you know what I mean?
And that's like, I know we laugh about it, but we say, oh, this fictional character, but a lot of it's not fictional. A lot of it's what you see is real. And since it's become a bit more popular, I've had people sending me show reels and like actors and that, part small time, but they wanted. And I'm like, no.
Because that's what I wanted to ask you, Chris. So I'm going to stop you right there.
Go on.
So if I came to you tomorrow and I was whoever, commissioning editor at ITV, BBC, Channel 4, Maxton, whatever, and I said to you, I want to put Steve Bracknell on the telly, 9 o'clock Thursday night, would you sack off Winnie and our Tommy and Housey and Bob the Bucket? Would it be a cast of the in-betweeners that came in, or would it be the authentic team?
Ah, depends how big fucking check we're, doesn't it? you know, you can't ever, if you go down that path and you get to a commissioning stage and you're talking to a broadcaster, they're going to want some assurances if they're spending a lot of money. that they're going to get a level of quality back. But I would argue tooth and nail that the beauty of this is that is the realism and that, you know, Tommy's on bins. Tommy's on bins and he's getting beat in street and, you know, houses out and about and they're getting stopped for photographs. And I don't think you can, there's a fine line with Bracknell. And if you get in that world, if you
get it wrong, you've lost
it. If you get it wrong, you plummet. And, you know, and if it did go like that, we got it wrong, then you'd live by it, sort of, say, look, I tried. But, like...
You'd live by it, sword. You'd die by it, sword. That's it. You know what I mean?
Oh, you see, there's a lot of him in me. There's a lot of... You know, so when people say it's fictional, I question whether it is or not. I think, no, it's... I don't,
you're a lot more serious than Steve in real life. You're a lot calmer, a lot more sort of zen.
You fucking have seen me go. You want to see when I used to drink?
Exactly. That I was going to come on to that. So obviously, like, the last few years, you've been like a massive sort of figurehead for like real life mental health. So obviously, like, your brother John's talked about mental health quite a lot, and he's got the platform, he's got the blue tick and all that jazz. But you've been out there and you've kind of said, look, I've got a problem. I've dealt with it. I've come through it. I'm here for if anyone wants to talk to me. And obviously that must be, I mean, you and your brother were the first people that got in touch with me when I got all the shit on Twitter that I got. And, you know, I'll be forever grateful to like both of you for that. But you must sit there and, you know, you've stopped drinking. You don't do drugs. You still smoke, you dirty bastard. Yeah, but you don't. Let's calm it down. But you don't, you know, you are sober, you are with it now and whatever else. So not only how much did your life change when you made that decision, but also how much does that affect when you see the abuse that your brother gets or that your friends get or whatever? Do you kind of, I guess it's two completely different scenarios. I'll break it down. So how did you decide to just go, boom, I'm sober, that's it?
Well, it's all intermingled a bit, but I just never, I suppose, I will talk honestly and openly frank about it if I can. First things first, I don't see myself as like a mental health spokesperson. I won't put myself on that pedestal. I just tell my truth and then that's it. And what else? I can only ever say my experience and my what I've gone through or what I believe. It's all I've got really in it. And it took me, I knew deep down, subconsciously, I didn't drink like normal people. When I drank, like, I can't, if I have a pint, I can't stop. Like, literally, something inside my body goes, you get ready, because you're going on a rate ride now. And for many a year, that was fun. And there's a lot of that, 80% of that, 90% of, like, that's like, I've got fond memories of it, and it's beautiful, and it's good memories. But then there's a side where I thought, this is just, there's a dark side to it and all. And you know, I could tell stories about what we've just been on about with parties, monkeys and Gallaghers and all that shit. I can tell all them stories about like being at Wembley Stadium, Noel Gallagher's there, arm off my head and that's funny, and people love it because of the environment and the persons and people involved. If I tell that story and it's was the Bridge Club and Dean,
yeah,
it becomes a horror story. Then, do you know what I mean? And like, it's
we
like
glamorize stuff, don't yeah, we? Yeah, like, we make it like a sexy thing to do.
Yeah, I'm glamorizing it, and there's plenty of that. But yeah, it just got to a point where it was having a really negative effect on my life. I didn't like what I was becoming. So I sought help, basically. Well, I was dragged into some help, and then I thought, no, actually, there might be something in this. And that's my own private way I get help. I mean, anyone can ask. I'd tell anyone in private how I got help, but I don't like go about shouting it.
No.
Many different ways to get help. And yeah, I've got a mountain of evidence now to suggest that my life's better when I don't booze. So any decision to go back boozing is I'm well aware of what the consequences are. And, you know, never say never. I try and, like, take it a day at a time, really, and just say, I don't put myself under a minute. It's not like I'm quivering in the corner going, oh, my God. Or, yeah. You know, I'm aware of what the risks are if I do go back out and have a bit of a whirl at it again. And, you know, I've got a degree since then in occupational therapy, in relationships. Ooh. My relationships have improved massively. And then you did bring up that Twitter thing and that whole thing, and I'm responsible for a lot of that too. I'm not just going to like sling mud and say, oh yeah, and my brother. And I'm sure my brother would say the same. Like, I mean, really, in grand scheme of the things, it's not important, but it can suffer. Your mental health can suffer. And but, you know, I weren't totally innocent in all that, and I'm sure I could have said the same. And really, and I suppose it's probably the same for people who are arguing with, all it does is leave you feeling shit inside. I suppose what you want deep down is someone to turn around and go, do you know what? You're right.
Yeah.
Like, you're searching for someone to go, yes, sorry, I was wrong, then you're right. And I think that this is... we're at this place now as like, oh God, we're going a bit deep, haven't we? But like, you're either left or you're right, or you're this or you're that. And it's not, the world's not like that. It's like, it's more complex than that. And I think like, not boozing just give me a bit more clarity, and I'm a bit more at peace with myself. And you know what, mate? If you want, obviously, I'll always try and stick up for people or stick up for what I believe in. I've never made any secret to what I believe in, but... Mm-hmm. Really, like, it's not my job to try and convince you what I think anymore, and that's probably come with maturity and being a normal functioning adult, to be honest. Like,
no, I take that.
I don't get hung up on it anymore. I don't get hung up on it. You know, some people I deeply love hold quite twisted views, and that's just the way of the world, you know what I mean? And I'll tell them, they can accept it, and then we move on. It's not. You know, it's done like, yeah, it sticks to one half a dozen other a lot of time, to be honest.
I think, in fairness, Chris, like, to, you know, if I didn't know you, like, I think that you've done a massive thing by talking about, you know, the situation you were in and the demons that you were facing. And there might be someone here tonight that's listening and thinking, shit, yeah, I do that. Or, you know, and if it's that one person that turns around and changes stuff, and, you know, I've talked about, I had a smear test this morning. I fucking share that every time I have one, because if I hadn't done 3 times out of the last 9, I'd have probably been dead. So I always talk about it. And I think it's one of the things, it's awful and it's embarrassing. And it's, you know, it's really... interior, if you want to put it like that. But I think you're doing exactly the same. And if one person, if it's an R Tommy or, you know, a Winnie or whatever, who's down the pub, who goes, fucking hell, yeah, I need to get some, you know, maybe not stop drinking, maybe that's not the issue, maybe there's more to it than, you know, just going
loads of things, gambling, fucking, there's all sorts goes on, isn't there?
I mean, cocaine is a massive thing at the moment that people have got major problems with.
Well, you know, like, what I don't want to do is, like, bang drum all the time, because people will just be like, hey, chill out, mate. Like, I know, Pete, I'm not like a killjoy. Go and crack on. Like, have a laugh. Like, life's for living, you know what I mean? But as long as people know every now and again that, just now and again, like, look, if you're struggling, excuse a shout, like, you don't need...
I was just going to ask, where, obviously, the thing that's caught the most traction recently has been the... pretty much the most recent the release, obviously, that you put out there, that's, it's had a lot of retweets, it's had so much love, it's probably the biggest thing that you've done. Where did that actually come from, and what led to it?
Selfish reasons, really, because I want to, with this Bracknell thing, there's a complete backstory and a world that no one's ever seen, that's in my head and on paper, and like, there's a lot going on that I simply cannot show in 2 minutes 20 online, because she's restricted to that. And Twitter feels like his natural home, really. And like we can do TikTok, which is 20 second sound bites. We've just gone viral on there. We like over 2 million views and stuff, just getting that in, not, you know, just dropping.
That's our Olivia though, that's running that.
That's our Olivia doing that. And, but really, I've always known that there's a deeper story. It's a deeper story here. And I thought, I've got to hit him in gut here. I've got to lure him. We've lured him in with comedy. Now we're going to hit him with, like, and I think what it's done is, one, and this is me being honest, I don't think I realised how good it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
I knew the scenario and I knew the type of conversation I wanted to occur, but I didn't realise just how real it had come across. And I think it's, I hope, and the feedback I'm getting suggests that people have gone, oh, right, okay, there's something more going on with this guy. So that were the reason I had it, because to try and show people that this project's bigger and deeper than like a guy falling out of a tree or trying to find a ball in a bush. So yeah, that was the reason for doing it. But then the reaction wise, it's been amazing, but also quite shocking how many people's been in touch going.
Were you prepared for the reaction that it
got? No,
bigger than you thought it was. Yeah,
I went. I was laying in bed all the night, so I'm terrible for staying up at night. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you just froze then, but I think we've got you back now.
Yeah,
I weren't prepared for reaction. Basically, can you hear me?
Yeah.
I went for reaction, and it were a little bit upsetting. I'm like a vampire. I stay up late at night, me. And I went downstairs, and I'd got some messages. Bottom lid did start going on, like, thinking like a random Thursday night. And I'm like, fucking shit, there is people out there. But, you know, what can you say when, like, lads are texting saying, I've just told my wife that I'm struggling, and it's like, you've done that because we've done that. And if that's,
yeah,
but that wasn't, I can't sit here and go, that was my aim, that was my motive, was to get people talking. It weren't really, it was for purely selfish reasons for project, but it turns out that it's had that effect.
I think it's like I said, it's like, I think it's one of those things that if you keep banging on about it, and even if you piss people off about it, like I know that everyone who follows me on Facebook or Twitter or whatever hates the hashtag don't neglect your foof. But yet again, every year I'll be like, I've just had a smear test. Have you booked yours? Because I've nearly died 3 times because of mine. And the amount of people that send me a message, normally privately, but some people comment on stuff. Sorry, my rabbits are shaking in the background. But some people comment on stuff and be like, shit, I hadn't booked mine. I need to book it in. And I'm like, brilliant. That's exactly the point of this message. And so I guess with that, if you've got one person, like we talked about my cousin earlier, and obviously it's a sore subject, that my cousin took his own life through suicide, and it was shit. It was absolutely shit for all of us involved. I think we all kind of saw it coming, but yet we're powerless to do anything from it.
Yeah.
Because I think the demons that he had anyway, you know, would have eradicated any kind of talking to friends or whatever. But I do wonder now, you know, if there's a young lad who's, you know, 20s, 30s, teens, 40s, 50s, 60s, whatever, who watches that video and thinks, actually, I'm going to message my mate Dave and say, Dave, I need to go for a pint or a coffee or just for tea or fish and chips or go fishing or whatever. Maybe that's
Jesus Christ. They're at it, them rabbits, aren't they?
Rampant.
Yeah, honestly, it's like
porn. What I like about that, what I like about the clip, if I'm honest, is that Steve didn't know how to react. He didn't know what to say to him. So, and his only answer is to say, well, why don't you come for Sunday dinner and have cauliflower cheese, you know? And it's not like, because if you're, you keep hearing this, oh, we need to talk, it's okay to talk, blah, blah, blah. And you're like, yeah, but then what? I'm not a mental health, but there's something beautiful about Steve not having the answer to it and just patting him on, patting him on the leg and saying, look, come to mine for roast beef.
It's beautiful. It's, you know, honestly, if that was shown on Channel 4 as an advert for, is it Calms or whatever it is that's the kind of thing at the moment, I think so many people would relate to that, even though obviously it's got a Yorkshire accent and it's like, oh, the Sheffield and blokes and whatever.
That kind of makes it work.
So many people would go, shit, yeah, that's real.
We're having a big discussion, subtitles or not subtitles, subtitles or not subtitles. Now, allow me, we'll subtitle it, it'll work, because I've got right into watching all programmes with subtitles. Try it, it's brilliant. I don't know why. I just focus more.
I've got ADHD, I can't do that. I'm like, it's one thing or other.
The other thing, I'm fed up of things being watered down to try and please everybody. And especially when we try and film football footage. For some reason, no one's ever been able to nail football, like real football footage. And it really gets me go that. So I was just like, right, play a match and you're going to walk around. It's literally like someone's like on Hills Park in the middle of a football game with a camera. And I'm like, why don't they do that at this level? Like, it's the simple, and it needs to be authentic, doesn't it? Because I hate it when they're like, well, it needs to appeal to all and be family friendly. It's like, no, it doesn't. What you're doing is just diluting something that's really pure. Yeah. I don't want to rant now, but it was fucking amazing, that reaction.
It's good. Just obviously to sort of bring that element of it to a close, I think just to everything that we've said about Steve tonight, it's so real. It's so, and your point there around the fact that he doesn't know how to react, and people, it's all well and good saying it's good to talk and we need to talk and it's the right thing to do. You know, in 2022, men need to be able, and we'll say it, men need to be able to reach out and say things. But I think from my personal point of view, I'm very much of the opinion that we're very good at saying this is what needs to be done, but we don't know how to do it, if that makes
exactly
sense.
Exactly that. It's exactly that. What about when he tells me?
Yeah.
Then what do I do? Because I'm not a mental health expert, mate. Like, and that's kind of what I wanted to get across. Like, he just sat with him, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
And, right,
we're over that. Cauliflower cheese.
Yeah.
Love it.
You're right, it needs to move on now to go, if they tell you that, this is what you can do.
Yeah.
And probably it's not going to fucking include cauliflower cheese.
So, obviously, we've alluded over through the night about your sort of past in getting to know certain band members. I think the most famous person that you probably, or the one that you relate to most, would be your brother. And for those first-time listeners, not those that aren't familiar, obviously, John's the leader, Reverend and the Makers. How's he finding things at the minute? How's he getting on?
He's all right. I'm very close to our kid. I always have been, and hopefully always will be. And he's all right. It's hard, isn't it? He's trying to, you know, he's been in game now for 20 years. Which is success in itself. Like,
yeah.
Don't use Arctic Monkeys as any sort of template for any band, because they're off the scale. Like, but if you look at bands that were around at the same time as Revenant Makers, they're just not there. So, like, the fact that my brother's even exists as a musician still is success in my eyes. But yeah, he's had his latest single, got single at week on Radio 2, and he just plugs away, man. And
it's a great song, isn't it? It's like, it's almost like I know we keep coming back to them, but like the Arctic Monkeys, like, you'll buy one album and you could be listening to one band called like A, and then you'll buy next album, it could be B, next album could be C, and it could be all completely different. And I feel like this next generation of the Reverend, it's just completely different. It's almost like there's a scar sort of theme. There's a sort of Africa. Obviously, he's been to Africa and he's been learning about music in Africa, but it's just so different. And his voice is beautiful, isn't it? Can you sing, Chris?
Of course I fucking can. I like to think I can, but no, not really. I sing in shower and that. I love a sing, but I wouldn't fucking put myself out there as a singer, no chance.
But his voice is so pure on this latest single and album, whatever. And it's just, it's so different.
Yeah, he'll never, he thinks deep and hard about his art, Arjun. Like, he really goes deep. And he refuses to make the same album twice. And I have to respect him because when he says, I'm going to do this, he goes and does it. You know what I mean? It might take him a year or so, but he'll get, in terms of like grafting as a musician, he puts the graft in. And like I said, just doing it as a career is success, really. And I think time will be kind to revenant makers, I think. Like in the future, when they look back and they look at the body of work, they'll go, all right, yeah, you hung in there, didn't you? And I think looking back, they'll have a lot of respect for him as a band.
And obviously, I was there. I knew it was going to happen. But the moment it happened and Steve Bracknell came on the stage at Tramlines Festival 2022, oh my God. Like, what was... So it was always going to happen. Like, that, it's one of those things that I was shocked and then I wasn't shocked at all because I knew exactly what was going to happen. Obviously, the sound was a bit shit because of the rain and whatever else. But suddenly on stage, I said this, I'm Steve Bracknell and I'm assistant manager. I was like, oh, my God, no. Surely not.
Steve and Nicky, they'd be into Revenant Makers. They're heavyweight champion at World, didn't they? And
I love it.
He's not right chuffed about monkeys playing Hillsborough Park, is he? But
no, because of course that's the training pitch, isn't it? Training Royal pitch.
He's trying to write to Domino Records now, saying you can't fucking can't do that to me and that. But no, Hillsborough Park, Revenant Makers and Steve Bracknell's like a match made in heaven, isn't it? It's got to happen, hasn't it?
Amazing. Because you did the O2 Academy, didn't you? Because I had COVID for that gig, so I couldn't go. But you went on stage there and did...
There's a clip, isn't there, where Steve's in bathroom and he's pretending to be Liam Gallagher, which everybody's done, but no one admits. And I've been looking at Stevie there. Everybody has like got 2 minutes on their own where they're like, well, I'll just like arch me back a bit, get my teeth out, and just, you know, get made up to Mike and I'll just be in for 2 minutes. But obviously, Nicky catches him in act and he's like all flustered. So Joe Cardinal had seen it and asked Steve if he wanted to do Acquiesce. And
it was Joe Cardinal, wasn't it? Yeah, not Reverend. Yeah.
So that were Steve pretending to be Liam, but then Chris being
pretending
Steve,
to be Steve,
but really pretending to be Liam.
And if you can follow that, you're doing well.
You can work that one out. It's not fictional, this is what I mean.
So we've got to touch on, obviously, people have tuned in. This is the Wednesday week, and you are a Sheffield Wednesday fan. Obviously, you sit near me on North. That's how I know you. I know you for fucking hell far too long. So what has your life been like as a Sheffield Wednesday fan? Like, how did you get into it? Was it your mum? Was it your dad? Was it granddad, grandma?
We're on a Wednesday podcast and we haven't mentioned them for an hour.
I know.
Shape up.
This week. We're doing a special with you. It's fine.
How's my life been as a Wednesday? Same as yours. Fucking terrifying and crap.
Can you remember your first game, Chris?
I remember going to reserves with my uncle Gary and our Tom. My first proper memory, like a Wednesday, was my dad. See, my dad weren't right into football. He's never been. He's from Cumbria, my dad. And my mum's like bread and butter Sheffield. She were born on ABC Streets opposite Barrack Tavern. Like, she's like, her side of family's like blue and white in blood. And my first memory were Sheridan scoring in final. And my cousin Dink. Mark, he had Down syndrome, bless him, and he was like my cousin, but like friend and family. So, and he was sound floor. He used to love sticking football stickers in, and that's I've seen my dad go crazy twice to a football, to football, and that were once when Sheridan smacked that in, and two when Man United scored two in last minute European Cup final.
Yeah,
and I remember going like I remember that day, but my uncle were mental crazy on Everton, absolutely Everton nut. And which is basically, so I were really nearly an Everton fan, which is just a higher standard of heartbreak, really, isn't it?
Yeah, at least you're the blue side of the city, you know, you used to be in a bit shit. It's
fine. I used to get sent Everton shirts, but always have a Wednesday shirt. I'm talking like five or six, like 91 time here. And 92, 93, started first ever Premier League season. At first ever Premier League match that Wednesday played in were Everton away at Goodison. And my dad, we went, but we were in Everton end. Wednesday played in that yellow and black strip. And I remember going, and in my head I were like, right, I'm like, I must be an Everton fan because I'm with my uncle Malcolm. And literally, like, you think I'm romanticising this, but I'm not. Everything changed when I saw Chris Waddle. Everything. Like, and I think that's nearest I've ever come to truly, truly being in love with another man.
And, do you know if he's ever watched Steve Bracknell?
Yeah, he's into it, I think.
He's banged into it. Yeah, yeah. Mental.
I've been out for a drink model and that is which is just mental, isn't it? Like so I come back that day and cried in Cowan Calf Beer Garden and said to my dad, I'm a Wednesday eye, and he's like, you need to ring your Uncle Malcolm. I've never been so scared. And he was just laughing. But then that whole period, that old, like, period were like, I was born in, I don't know how old you guys are, but how old are you, Stevie, can I ask?
Mid-40s.
Right, mid-40s.
How old are you, Victoria?
34.
So you're, yeah, well, you know what the history of your club, of course you do. And I was born into that. If I could be transported back to any time, or any place, I'd be in my Auntie Christine's kitchen on a Saturday tea time with like condensation on windows, Praise of Grumbles on. Like, Wednesday's just beat someone at home in like 1992. And it's like, because Stevie's like nearly filling up here, isn't it?
You'd spend that night studying Greener.
Yeah, yeah. I'd just read that. Yes. You'd read back page for like 6 hours and remember, you're looking what minutes and how many are scored in.
Yeah, who scored? What score were at half time? What crowd were? What league? Oh,
I just want to do it.
100%. 100%.
And it was just magical. And we had these players that were like magical. And Sheffield just seemed like, well, blew off anyway, just seemed in love with that team and that time. And I probably romanticised it and there's loads of nostalgia around it, but I was just obsessed and it grabbed me heart. Like, I've never loved Oak like I've loved Wednesday. That's like ridiculous. And like, you know.
And she breaks your heart week in, week out. Yeah. She fucks you over financially, emotionally. She'll cheat on you like when Forestieri refused to travel that game. I remember feeling like I'd been cheated on. Like, it was disgusting when Di Canio went missing after that push. But you're still there, isn't it?
It's just, you know, we all feel it. And I think we always, you know, other half will always take Mickey out of us saying we're massive and all that. I get it. I get why they get annoyed with us. But it's kind of true. Like, the deep... If this club ever gets back to that Premier League, like... The fucking lot will go off. Do you know what I mean? And I know that whoever comes in, Darren Moore, whoever it is, they know that. And it's worth that risk to go, do you know what? I'm coming in. Because if I do it, I've got a statue up outside stadium. You know what I mean? And whoever does take us up back up, it'll happen one day, I'm sure. Whoever does it, for me, would be the greatest Wednesday player or manager ever now. It's been that long. And...
So I'm going to stop you there, Chris. And I want you to channel your inner Steve. And I want to think, so Saturday afternoon, we're going to sign off after this. Saturday afternoon, 3 p.m, we're playing Shrewsbury at home. If Steve Bracknell is in that dressing room, what is he going to say to that first 11?
What would Steve Bracknell say? This Saturday at home to Shrewsbury.
This Saturday at home to Shrewsbury.
I think he'd walk in calm. He wouldn't go in all guns blazing.
Obviously,
fucking,
yeah.
And he, you know, he'd push a few with fucking chest. Cold in it today. It's fucking wet out there. Oh, want to watch World Cup, don't you? Maybe, you know, fucking bang on wall. Well, you don't fucking watch, you don't watch fucking anything until you've dealt with this lot. Because they're going to come and park bus. And it's up to you to find your creation. Up to you.
Playing foot badge. That.
Yeah, you're playing. You're going, when you walk out today, have a look to the left. Look at that cop. I fucking did not. Dumb, because that's not Brad, that's me. I just fucking give me teeth. Just fucking let me have 10 minutes with you.
And obviously, like, Chris, before we go, like, we had the moment last year, wasn't it, during lockdown when we were doing Shay's triathlon and his podcast, and we'd done the interview with Steve, which Shay believes in Steve. Like, I'm not going to ruin that for him. But then we had the moment that we got Barry Bannon on. And you were buzzing.
Oh,
you were absolutely wetting yourself, texting me like, oh, my God, any minute now. And I was like, I'm not telling you when. I'm just going to press that text.
I'm 36 years old. I've been in rooms with, like, fucking... I've met all my heroes. I've, like...
Not Barry Bannon.
I could name drop big time. Barry Bannon, he inboxed me on Twitter, and I lost my fucking head. Running around the house, Barry's messaged me. Barry's messaged me. I love him so much. He's like,
oh, honestly, it was so funny, Stevie. So to give you, like, obviously context, we were doing Shay's triathlon. We'd done the podcast the week before with Steve Bracknell, and you know, Shay was buzzing that we got Steve Bracknell. Then Chris said, "Wouldn't it be funny if?" And it just kind of went from there, where. Because we knew that Barry had watched a bit of Steve and he kind of got it.
I still think Barry might think, I don't think Barry totally understands it, mate.
No, he does. He does because after we'd done the call, Shay's internet cut out and he said to me, he was like, is he real? And I went, no, do you know who he is? He's the guy off the Arctic Monkeys album, blah, 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 blah. And he was like, oh, fucking hell, yeah, I get it now. Like, so he does know now. At the time, he probably didn't.
I'm literally just buzzing that Barry Bannon knows who I am. Absolutely ridiculous.
So funny, but it was just such a funny moment to watch Steve Bracknell appear and be like, have I clicked on AGM for Sunday Lee? Nicky. And Barry Bannon was pissing himself.
Yeah, he's good, isn't he? He's he's an absolute credit to our club, Bannon.
He is.
Like, how he represents, how he condones himself on pitch and off it. Like, it's what you want, innit? And I think if he takes us up this year, he's up there for me because he's stuck by us, hasn't he?
I think there was a period when he was first made captain when it was kind of like switching in between him and Hutchinson and whoever else. That I wasn't 100% sure because he was so hot-headed, as is Barry Bannon. But I think in the last few years, probably since he's had, like, Elsie, he's calmed down a lot and he's just a quite... He still gets angry. We all get angry.
I think to that point, though, the problem that Bannon will always face is that he's always going to get that backbite that people go, well, it's just League One or it's just Championship or whatever else. Nobody's telling me, and I say this week in, week out on podcast, nobody's telling me that if we weren't playing two leagues higher, you wouldn't be part of that team.
Yeah, and I'll tell you another 100%. Thing else there. And I'll go out and say this, and if I get slagged, that early 90s team that we've been discussing and, you know, I'm putting Bannon on bench. That's all I'm saying.
I think he'd
be good enough to play alongside them. People like Carlton Palmer and that might disagree. I like Palmer. I've got a lot of time for him, but I know he was saying this conversation cropped up. But I think he's in and around that squad.
I agree with that.
Yeah,
100%.
And the fact that he's stuck with us despite where we are puts him in that conversation, doesn't it?
Well, he's transcended now, hasn't he, into like. He's just like part of club's history, and like he's a Wednesdayite. It just oozes out of him, doesn't it? What it is to be a Wednesdayite, and I could talk about Barry Bannon for another 3 hours if you want.
So, Chris, we're going to let you go, but tell us, you know, what is the future of Steve Bracknell in 90 seconds. Like, what is coming up? What can we expect? What do we need to petition for?
He's about to announce the biggest sponsorship deal that grassroots football in Sheffield has ever seen.
Is it Mailing Bridge Motors?
No.
Oh,
I'm not saying too much, but Bracknell is about to drop an absolute bombshell on Sunday League football. This sponsorship is a game changer.
Do you know what? The irony is, right, my mum is obsessed with Steve Bracknell. Obviously, Babs is Steve's mum now. Like, so she's buzzing about it. But Gary Wainwright off of Mailing Bridge Motors sits behind us at match. And every time he comes up, she goes, fuck, Wainwright, bloody Gary Wainwright.
And you've got cheek to call it fictional.
I know. It's so real. It is so real. Well, Chris McClure, thank you so much for coming on tonight. We've loved talking to you. We cannot wait for the next of the Bracknell saga, the next Reverend in the Makers album, the next Steve Bracknell on an Arctic Monkeys album. That would be the dream, let's be honest. But thank you so much. I'm going to stop recording. Hold on, bear with me. Woo.
The Wednesday Week is sponsored by Michael Constantine Wealth Management. We bet you can't find a financial advisor closer to Hillsborough Stadium.
It's the 90th minute. You've got all your mates round. You've got your McNugget share boxes coming down the left wing ready to go. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points back of the net. Le Bosch. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com for more information. See you later.
And there it is, that's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van, unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.